place where no one could kick me out. I wanted to work hard and earn a living and support myself, and I didn't want anyone to have the power to take that away from me. In other words, stability. Seriously, was that so much to ask for? That goal was the reason I was sitting in this classroom. Courses on small businesses, planning one, starting one, running one. Everything I needed to know to start up a business where I could be my own boss. As for what sort of business I wanted to run, I hadn't figured that out yet. The important part was me running it. Alone. I tapped my pen against my lower lip. Maybe an online business. Then I'd have time to think about my response before telling customers I'd rather swallow a puffer fish whole than give them a refund. My thoughts drifted back to the Crow and Hammer. Keeping half an eye on the instructor's presentation, I opened a private browser tab and squinted at the search bar. 5 minutes of Googling illustrated this shit wasn't searchable. Any combination of the words mythic, guild, mage, arcana, and magic produced millions of hits. All books, games, movies, TV shows, and comic books. I'd have to sift through fan wiki pages for hours to find a single real result. And even then, how would I separate fact from fiction? I popped into the Wikipedia page about magic conspiracy theories and read through all the sections. Most of it sounded as cuckoo as it had before I'd learned magic was real. But I noted a few tidbits about government surveillance and a powerful international organization suppressing all information about magic. The MPD, Magici Politei something, was the easiest concept to grasp out of everything Aaron had explained. Discussing magic made my head spin. But red tape bureaucracy was familiar to anyone who'd ever filed taxes. Back to Google. My search of MPD produced a whole lot of boring businesses. But after scrolling through 6 pages of results, I found an ugly white website for a financial investment company, with a logo that matched the one on Clara's forms, and Aaron's ID. The homepage was a login portal, waiting for a username and password. Well, that was a dead end. I closed the tab and tried to focus on my lesson, but it was hard. Magic existed. Mages were real, and I'd met 3. I'd trespassed in their forbidden world, and for a short time, I could be part of it. The distraction was a small price to pay for the chance to explore a hidden society of magic and those who wielded it. Chapter 7. Tuesday. Shift number 3. I arrived 10 minutes early. The community college was only 15 minutes away and started setting up. The place was empty. Ramsey wasn't in yet, and Aaron, Kai, and Ezra weren't around either. On Sunday night, the guys had assured me I didn't have to tell anyone I was human. That it was better if I didn't. Let the guild members assume I was a mythic. The longer they went not knowing how powerful I might be, the less likely they'd be to throw a fit about my humanness contaminating their precious headquarters. But no sooner did I set up the bar than 2 guys came trotting down the stairs and made a beeline for me. "Is it true?" the younger one asked eagerly. "Are you human?" Why did they all say human like it was a contagious disease? I scanned them up and down, unimpressed. Short, wiry, with bleach-blonde hair and a messy mop, and odd round sunglasses perched on his nose despite the dim interior. A couple years younger than me, by my best guess. His pal was a bit older and average-looking. Nothing obviously weird about him. He wasn't anywhere near as fit as Aaron, Kai, and Ezra, but he wasn't flabby, either. Brown hair and deep-set eyes with dark circles under them. "Well?" the bottle blonde demanded. "Are you?" Clearly someone had spilled the beans. "Yeah? Who told you?"
"Everyone's talking about it."
He stuck out his hand.
"Name's Liam. Telekinetic."
"Tori." I shook his hand. "Telekinetic means moving things with your mind?" He flashed a smile. My spray bottle of cleaning solution lifted weightlessly into the air, and I couldn't hold back my shocked gasp.
"Whoa!"
It was just like film special effects, except for real. Concentration tightened his face, and a liquor bottle from my station floated upward, too.
The whiskey drifted over and settled gently on the counter in front of me. I picked up the bottle, half convinced it was a prop. That's gotta be handy.
Pretty useful,
he admitted, barely containing his glee at my reaction.
So, how did you land this job?
Kind of by accident, I replied evasively. No need to get into the details, right? Liam's friend was watching me hopefully, so I offered him my hand. I'm Tori.
Tom.
He shook my hand, his grip limp. What's your class? I asked.
Psychica? Clear audience?
What's that?
Super hearing,
Liam answered before Tom could.
He can hear people talking within a certain vicinity.
Neat, I said politely, even though that wasn't nearly as cool as telekinesis. Can I get you guys drinks? They both placed their orders and I whipped up their drinks while Liam chatted about telekinesis, waxing technical about how his ability required intensive training to develop control, enhance strength, and stretch limitations. It got boring in about 10 seconds.
A telekinetic can only move objects with his mind that he can physically move with his body,
he explained with the enthusiasm of a toddler talking about his toy fire truck.
So, no throwing cars around like in the movies. Some telekinetics will...
Here you go, I said brightly, cutting off the lecture. Enjoy. To my irritation, Liam and Tom slid onto stools and nursed their drinks like old ladies with hot tea. I grabbed my cloth and started wiping, working my way toward the opposite end of the bar.
So what do you do for fun, Tori?
Liam asked.
Are you a party girl? Got a boyfriend?
I privately rolled my eyes as I scrubbed away a sticky spot. Great. Awkward flirting had commenced. Not really a party girl, I answered. Last time I'd gone clubbing, I'd clobbered a guy for feeling up my ass on the dance floor.
What do you like to do? Seen any good movies lately?
I moved farther down the bar, dutifully scrubbing the polished wood. Not recently. Excuse me, guys, I've got work to do.
Take it easy, Tori,
Liam said in a chipper tone.
You don't need to...
I lost track of his voice as I walked into the kitchen and stopped in surprise. Ramsay, the goth cook, was absent from his stool, and in his place was a guy my age, with stringy hair and the strong smell of cigarette smoke clinging to him.
Oh, hey,
he said.
You must be Tori. Clara told me she'd hired you as a temp.
You must be Cooper, the other cook, the one who'd called in sick over the weekend. He smiled wanly.
Clara didn't mention you were so pretty.
This time I rolled my eyes without hiding it. Smooth, very smooth.
My friends tell me I'm slick as oil.
I snorted and swept past him. Grabbing a bottle of rum to restock my station, I returned to the bar to find the liquor well empty, and over 20 bottles lined up in front of Liam. What are you doing? I snapped. The rum was pulled from my grip as if by an invisible string. It zoomed down the bar and settled beside the other bottles. Liam smirked at me.
Come work over here, he said. It's hard to talk while you're rushing all over the place.
Gritting my teeth, I stalked over and snatched up an armful of bottles. I have a job to do.
We're your only customers.
My glare snapped from Liam to Tom, who winced guiltily, then back to Liam. Pivoting on my heel, I marched to my station and started replacing bottles, only for them to float away as soon as I set them down. Stop that! I grabbed a bottle out of the air and put it back, but it rocketed upward again. Liam laughed.
You can't win, Tori. Just come chat for a few minutes.
I clutched my remaining bottles to my chest, heart pounding. Anger wasn't quite winning the battle against the sinking cold in my stomach. Aaron had scoffed at Psychica Mythics for being weak and useless. But with my arrival at the guild, Liam and his ilk were no longer at the bottom of the power totem pole. I was. And the way he was smirking at me, he knew it. He felt powerful. He was in control. Just as I was considering whether my soda gun line was long enough to spray down the asshole, Aaron strode through the front door, carrying a black zippered case over 3 feet long in one hand.
Ah, shit,
he said breathlessly as he hurried up to the bar.
I knew those dicks would make me late. I told them.
He broke off, his blue eyes sweeping over my face, then down to the bottles I was clutching like priceless collectibles. His attention snapped to Liam. The rest of my liquor lined up in front of him.
What the hell are you doing, Liam?
Liam's eyes widened and he shifted nervously.
Nothing, just harmless teasing and...
It's fine. The words came out more terse than I'd intended, but I was annoyed at how relieved I felt to see Aaron. I needed to handle this kind of shit myself. Everything is fine. Aaron gave me a sideways look as I dumped my bottles back where they belonged and marched over to the rest. The guys watched me replace each bottle, the silence painful. Tom had shrunk to half his normal size. Setting his strange burden on the counter with a thud, Aaron muttered,
"I'll be right back."
He strode the length of the pub. As the door banged shut behind him, the final bottle in my hand shot from my fingers and flew along the bar. It plopped down in front of Liam, and he chortled as he waited for me to come get it. Apparently, because I'd snapped at Aaron, Liam was under the impression that I thought his little game was fun. I stomped over to him and wrapped my hand around the bottle's neck. Gripping it tightly, I got in his face. "I am not your plaything," I hissed icily. "And if you ever want another drink from me, you'll start acting like a goddamn adult. My job isn't entertaining you." Liam's eyebrows rose over the top of his stupid round sunglasses. Then his gaze dropped below my eye level. An invisible tug pulled at the front of my blouse. I jerked back and looked down. The top button of my shirt was undone and Liam was grinning again.
"I don't know, Tori. I think you're lots of fun."
For a moment, I just stared. Then I slugged him in the face. The impact jarred up my arm, pain flaring through my knuckles. His head snapped back and his sunglasses flew off, clattering across the floor. He pressed a hand to his cheek, his amusement gone and jaw clenched in fury. He lurched up, knocking his stool over backward. The bottle in front of me twitched. A wave of heat rolled over my back and Liam froze where he stood. Aaron slung an arm around my shoulders, his skin almost hot enough to burn.
"As much as I would love to see Tori beat your pathetic ass, Liam, the blood would upset Clara. So how about you get the hell out? I have work to do and get lost. You can't tell me what..."
Aaron smiled, his side pressing against mine.
"I can, and I am."
Liam opened his mouth, then closed it. Pressing his lips together until they turned white, he spun around and stormed for the exit. His sunglasses flew off the floor and zoomed to his hand as he disappeared outside. Instead of following, Tom slunk to the furthest table and sat, clutching his drink. Aaron slid his arm off my shoulders and stepped back.
"Next time, go for his eyes. He needs to see to use his telekinesis."
I redid my top button. Am I fired for punching him? He laughed, back to his usual relaxed self like he hadn't just terrified a telekinetic into fleeing the building.
"Liam is a weasel. He deserved a good punch in the face."
That wasn't quite a "no, you're not fired." Maybe sensing my doubt, he asked,
"Do you know the first rule of the guild?"
I shook my head.
"It's don't hit first, but always hit back."
"Oh, that." I frowned. "Didn't I hit first?"
"Liam didn't hit you, but you were defending yourself." "With enthusiasm,"
he added amusedly.
"Where'd you learn to punch like a pro?"
"I took a few years of taekwondo in high school. Justin had dragged me with him while he was training for the police academy, but I hadn't kept up with it. If that's the guild's first rule, what's the second?"
"Rule number two is don't get caught."
"Don't get caught at what?"
"Anything."
He smirked.
"You can't get in trouble if you don't get caught."
My eyes narrowed. Clara told me this guild is on the up and up.
"We are."
He grabbed the laptop he must have gone outside to get before sneaking in through the kitchen.
"Following the letter of the law and following the spirit of the law are two different things."
"And which one does the crow and hammer follow?"
"Whichever is most convenient at any given moment."
He jumped over the bar and landed neatly on the other side. Setting his laptop down, he slid onto a stool.
I need something stronger than rum tonight.
What would you like?
Surprise me.
While I poured him a double whiskey sour, he flipped open the laptop. I slid the drink over to him, then eyed the long, thin object he'd carried in, encased in heavy-duty black fabric. What's that? I asked.
Just my switch.
Your what? He dragged his attention off his screen.
Oh, right. Sorry. Guess you wouldn't know.
He pushed his laptop aside and drew the case closer.
A switch is a magical conduit. The real term is caduceus, but who wants to say that all the time?
Unzipping it, he pulled the narrow bag open to show me what lay within. I looked from the glossy black sheath to the gleaming hilt, then back at him. That is a sword. A freaking sword. Who walked around with a sword?
Only useless mages train with wands. We train with weapons. If someone's trying to kill me, I'd rather have a sword than try to poke their eyes out with a piddly wand.
I grasped the leather-wrapped handle and lifted it a few inches, its weight surprising me. Do people try to kill you often?
Not usually.
He zipped the bag.
Magipol doesn't have the manpower to track down every rogue mythic across the globe, so they post bounties instead. Guilds do the tag and bag, then hand the perp over to Magipol for trial.
Huh. I remembered a passing remark he'd made on Sunday. And you, Kai, and Ezra are after a bounty for a rogue sorcerer?
Yep. Thought we had a solid lead this afternoon, so I grabbed Sharpie, but the guy gave us the slip.
Sharpie. You named your sword Sharpie?
We're supposed to be incognito, Tori. What if someone overheard me talking about my fiery Deathbringer or Warblade of Murderous Doom?
They'd probably think you were talking about a video game. I poked the sword bag. So how does it work? You can make flames without this?
A switch is like a focus. It's easier to control the elements through a tool, and using a switch lets you create more specific and targeted effects.
He shrugged.
I can light the room on fire easily enough, but if I want to create a concentrated band of flame, I need a switch.
Any switch or only Sharpie?
A sword similar in size and shape to Sharpie would be functional, but we work best with the switches we've trained on.
Magic is complicated. I informed him dryly.
Try talking to an arcaner. That's complicated.
Lucky for me, Liam the telekinetic weasel was the worst part of my day. Sylvia, the older woman I'd called a hag during my first shift, was a close second, though. Realizing she'd been insulted by a measly human, her hag level had increased by 10. We had another friendly chat about how I wasn't serving her a damn thing until she proved she had manners. Again, I was reluctantly relieved that Aaron was nearby, though he may have riled up Sylvia even more than I had. Somehow everyone knew I was human, but they didn't all see me as a weak runt of a bartender. A friendly young woman who identified herself as a witch spent a solid 20 minutes talking about yoga and invited me to join her and her also-a-witch boyfriend on their weekly nature walk. A sweet old lady with turquoise-framed glasses and a knit cap offered to do a tarot card reading for me. A 40-ish-year-old man with dark bronze skin and a fantastic goatee chatted with me about local restaurants, many of which I'd attempted to work at. When a man approached, built like a tank, shaved head, heavy brow that shadowed his dark eyes, I almost shrank behind the bar. He looked like a mobster. But Aaron murmured distractedly,
"Hey, Lyndon. How's the hunt going?"
Lyndon asked in a deep, gravelly voice.
"The bastard's a slippery one. If we don't hurry, someone else'll nab him." "Have you asked Tay to scout around?"
He gestured at the bronze-skinned foodie I'd spoken to earlier.
"We need a confirmed starting point first,"
Aaron replied.
"Kyle'll figure it out, he always does. Knowing him, he's already got a new lead and he's just letting me slave away here for nothing."
Lyndon chuckled, then turned and offered me his hand.
"Lyndon McAllister, Arcana Sorcerer."
"Pleasure to meet you," I said. "Tori Dawson, human bartender. Can I get you a drink?"
"Bourbon on the rocks, please."
He watched me pull out a glass.
How's it going so far?
This can't be an easy adjustment.
Not bad. Aaron's entertaining, at least. The pyromage in question glanced up.
What does that mean?
I smirked at him just to be annoying, then said to Linden, I admit I've been picturing sorcerers as old men with beards to their waists and giant spellbooks. He chuckled as I set his drink down.
Let me guess. Aaron has been telling you how boring and stuffy we are, and how lame Arcana magic is.
Yeah, pretty much.
I never called it lame,
Aaron muttered distractedly, eyes fixed on his screen. Linden perched on the edge of a bar stool.
Sorcery is the most common Arcana order. I specialize in counter magic, meaning spells that affect other magic. I used to be a combat sorcerer, but those days are behind me.
Curious, I asked, why the switch? He rubbed his jaw.
Counter magic is safer. In some guilds, the line between legal and illegal spells can get blurry, especially when it comes to offensive magic. After the MPD dissolved my last guild, I decided a change was in order.
They dissolved his guild? That sounded ominous. I decided to shift the topic away from his potentially sensitive history. How long did it take you to learn counter magic?
A few years, but I was well past the apprenticeship stage by then.
He smiled whimsically.
Most sorcerers spend at least 12 years in training. Alchemists and healers take even longer to complete their apprenticeships.
Whoa.
It isn't easy to learn, but it's the most versatile magic. And for experienced practitioners, it's the most powerful.
Aaron scoffed.
We'll see who's laughing next time Gerard puts you on your ass.
Linden remarked cheerfully before tossing back the last of his bourbon.
I've got work to do. See you two later.
As I committed Linden's information about Arcana magic to memory, I entered his drink in the till. Each guild member had a running tab, and hardly anyone paid cash, which didn't bode well for my poor empty tip jar. Hey, Aaron, I said after a minute.
Hmm?
You said you were hunting a rogue sorcerer, right?
Yeah.
What if he's a really powerful one? He looked up from his laptop, an amused sparkle in his eyes.
Don't worry about me, new girl.
Linden meant one-on-one. But a single arcaner against me, Kai, and Ezra? Even an experienced combat sorcerer would have a hell of a time beating us. And this rogue is far from the best.
Strength in numbers, huh? I murmured. Not my thing. No one on the planet was as invested in saving my butt as I was, and I didn't like counting on someone else to be there when I needed them, only to find myself alone. Aaron didn't notice my doubtful expression as he focused on his laptop, strong fingers zipping over the keyboard. I glanced at his sword, hidden in its black case. For a supposedly easy opponent, he'd brought along an awfully big weapon. Well, I wouldn't lose sleep over it. His ability to navigate dangerous situations inspired minimal confidence, but Kai oozed confidence, and I had yet to see Ezra appear anything less than utterly unfazed. If they wanted to chase down dangerous rogues with deadly magic, that was their business. Me? I was just here to tend the bar. And I planned to keep my nose out of anything that wasn't a cocktail recipe book.
Chapter 8.
To my disappointment, Kai and Ezra didn't make an appearance on Wednesday. My shift passed much like Tuesday's, with a few ugly encounters, a few pleasant ones, and a whole bunch of people who didn't care to speak to me beyond ordering a drink. Liam didn't return, but Tom showed up for the better part of the evening, taking the same seat in the far corner and nursing drinks while he read a thick sci-fi paperback. Sylvia came in and we had a slightly more polite snarling match. I made her a proper Manhattan, and she seemed pleased that I'd learned it for her. Not that I'd studied up for her, just so I didn't look stupid again. I was getting an idea of the regulars and the less regular regulars. Many members I'd glimpsed during the big meeting hadn't returned, but others showed up every day. They'd grab a few drinks and a meal, then head upstairs or downstairs, depending on what they needed to do. According to Aaron, the second level was for work— planning and executing jobs, completing paperwork, coordinating with team members and research. Rogue hunting wasn't the only work mythics could take on to earn extra cash, or bonuses, as Aaron called them. But no one went into detail about it. Probably a not-for-human-ears topic. The basement level was for training, both magical and physical. Aaron mentioned a gym, a sparring room, a bunker for practicing magic, and an alchemy lab. The third level, where I'd met the guild officers, was off-limits for most members. The territory of the guildmaster, assistant guildmaster, and officers. Aaron was late again, but I didn't give him too hard a time. He was clearly exhausted. He, Kai, and Ezra had pulled an all-nighter tracking the rogue sorcerer. Instead of working on his laptop, Aaron lined up a row of chairs along the wall and lied across the makeshift bed, covering his eyes with a borrowed dish towel. At least he didn't snore. Clara checked on me each night around 6 or 7, praising my efforts and gushing about how much work she was getting done before heading home for the night. Felix popped in once to see how Aaron was handling his new assignment, triggering a lecture about sleeping on the job, but I saw no sign of the other two officers. Friday's shift went the same. I wouldn't admit it to anyone, especially Aaron, but getting the cold shoulder from most of my customers was wearing on me. They weren't rude enough to yell at, but neither were they friendly. Aaron napped through my shift again, even more tired than the day before. For a magical guild, it wasn't all that fun. Yet I could see glimpses of how it might have been if I were a mythic instead of an unwelcome human. I could hear laughter from other levels, and I got to watch the smiles fade off mythics' faces when they approached the bar. The sociable members were in the minority. For my Saturday shift, I had high hopes the weekend would mean a busier night, and maybe friendlier faces. The afternoon weather was hot and balmy, so I picked out bright red shorts, almost the same shade as my hair, a tank top with a strappy back and cute white sandals. For a change, I wore my hair down. My usual wild waves straightened into sleek locks that fell almost to my elbows. I was feeling good. Tips had been shit all week, but maybe I could charm some generosity out of my customers tonight. Once again, Aaron was late, but I had no issue setting up. I was just laying out my freshly cut garnishes when he breezed in, a bounce in his step. "We got him," he announced before I could ask. "Tagged him in the marina, 5 minutes before he would have booked it straight for international waters." "Nice," I said, my earnest relief surprising me. Had I been worrying about the guys that much? Glad it's over with.
Same.
He dropped onto his favorite stool just to the left of my station, the circles under his eyes offset by his grin.
Looking good today, Tori.
Huh. I'd expected him to be too oblivious to notice I'd put extra effort into my appearance. Thanks. He caught a lock of my hair and slid it through his fingers. I froze, my thoughts thrown completely off track.
I kinda miss the crazy curls, though.
I arched my eyebrows. What are you implying?
Nothing,
he said uncertainly. Aware enough to notice I'd dressed up, but oblivious of how he was treading on thin ice with that comment. I decided to spare him a bout of female insecurity. How are Ezra and Kai?
Kai's fine, as always. Ezra took a nasty hit, but he's just bruised. The sorcerer came out way worse.
I poured 2 rum and cokes and passed him one. A toast to a successful job?
Damn right.
We clinked glasses and he took a long gulp.
After a tough job, we usually hit the bar for a few celebratory drinks, but Ezra wanted to take it easy and Kai has a date, so it's just me tonight.
Well, you and me. I nudged his glass with mine. I'll celebrate with you. His grin flashed again and I returned it, a flutter in my stomach. He downed half his drink in a few swallows.
Man, I am gonna sleep like a rock tonight. I haven't had a good night's rest all week.
I finished straightening my garnishes. How does Kai have the energy for a date?
He's been getting his sleep while I've been here.
Aaron grumped.
Slacker.
Does he have a girlfriend? I asked curiously, trying to imagine what sort of girl Kai would go for. With his exotic looks and classy style, from what I'd seen anyway, he could attract almost any woman.
Girlfriends, Aaron answered, emphasizing the S. I don't know where he finds them,
but he goes out with a new lady every damn week. No way. Kai, a player? I hadn't pegged him as the womanizing type. What about you?
Happily single.
Ramsay waltzed out of the kitchen, his unnaturally black hair extra spiky, and his eyeliner drawn on with more finesse than I'd ever managed on my own face.
Aaron isn't mentioned in his string of relationships that failed spectacularly. We take bets on how long each girl will last.
Aaron scowled.
The current average is 4 months.
Ramsay added. Wait, wait. I cut in. Aaron has located multiple women who were willing to tolerate him for 4 whole months? Ramsay laughed. With a sulky glare at the two of us, Aaron hunched over his drink.
Like you can talk, Ramsay. I've been with my boyfriend for 3 years. Thanks very much. That's my point. I'm way better with women than you.
Rolling my eyes, I poured Aaron another drink and slid it over. I'm sure you'll find the right girl eventually.
Real comforting, Tori.
Once Ramsay returned to the kitchen, I gentled my tone. If it's any consolation, my track record is basically the same. He glanced up.
Oh?
Are you surprised that I don't have a boyfriend, or surprised that I've ever had one?
Bit of both.
I shook my head, but I was more amused than anything else.
We gingers have it rough, huh?
He laughed and raised his drink.
I'll toast to that.
The evening didn't stay quiet for long. People started filtering in around 5, and by 6 I was too busy to keep Aaron company. He joined a table with Lyndon the sorcerer and 2 girls my age, animatedly describing his rogue sorcerer takedown, while I zipped back and forth between the bar and kitchen. Ramsay and Cooper were both working, and I found myself carrying way too many baskets of chicken wings for the number of people in the bar. The lack of friendliness continued, but I ignored it, offering smiles and bright greetings to everyone. Eventually they'd warm up to me, right? A few more tips made their way into my jar than on other nights. Around 8, excited voices cut through the rumble of conversation. 5 people squeezed through the door, chatting and clapping each other on the back. At their appearance, most of the mythics in the pub cheered and whooped.
Victory!
One of the new arrivals yelled, pumping a fist in the air.
Around on me!
More cheers. I scrambled into position, my eyes widening. The 5 newcomers were wearing several cows' worth of black leather and had weapons strapped to their limbs or slung over their backs, along with thick belts carrying fat pouches. They looked like a cross between special ops soldiers and vampire slayers.
How did it go, Andrew?
Someone called.
Kicked ass,
a 50-something guy answered. Despite his blade-style outfit, he had a fatherly air that made me think he should be coaching a kid's soccer team.
Bagged 4 and scattered the remainder of the nest.
And did some damage to the escapees, too, a petite woman added, running a gloved hand over her pixie-short blonde hair streaked with pink. The top of a monster-sized weapon jutted above her shoulder. And get this, right when we were packing up,
The Odin's Eye Guild showed up, ready to clean house.
The tallest guy boasted, the one who'd proclaimed a round of drinks on the way in.
They were pissed.
Laughter rang through the room as the group reached the bar. The petite woman and older guy broke off to join Aaron's table, while the other 3 stopped in front of me. The tallest guy, with a narrow face and patchy beard, might not have looked impressive on any other day, but his gear was doing him all kinds of favors. Congrats, I said, though I had no idea for what. What do you want to do for the round? His excitement faded as he assessed me.
Whiskey shots. No, not that one. The good stuff.
I halted my reach for the whiskey in my well as he pointed imperiously at the bottle on the shelf behind me.
Hurry it up,
the other guy said, a big dude with lots of muscle who would have been intimidating even without the leather duster.
We're trying to celebrate here.
I bit back a retort and reached for the bottle. How was I supposed to know the drill if no one had explained it? Jeez. I swiftly lined up shot glasses and poured, spilling in my rush. The 3rd mythic of the team, a girl around my age with sleek blonde hair tied into a ponytail, watched me with her nose scrunched like she'd stepped in dog shit. Everyone in the pub crowded around the bar to partake in the shots.
I did a rapid count and added another 6 glasses. The triumphant team passed them around, and Ramsay and Cooper popped out of the kitchen to grab shots, too. The older leader, Andrew, lifted his into the air.
To another.
Hold up, Aaron interrupted, his shot in hand. Tori, pour yourself one.
Everyone looked at me, and most of the stares were unfriendly. I shifted awkwardly. That's okay. Go ahead.
It's tradition. Everyone does a shot when a team makes a clean sweep on a job.
Every hammer takes a shot.
Someone corrected.
She's not gilded. She's part of the group. Poor shot, Tori.
Shove it, Aaron.
The tall guy snapped.
You're killing the mood.
Aaron's usual good humor was gone without a trace. He held his shot out to me.
Take mine then, Tori.
That's okay. I mumbled. Damn it, Aaron, stop making them hate me. To my shock, Andrew, the team leader, gave me a smile.
Pour another one. Go on, Tori,
Lyndon added, pushing in beside Aaron. The petite blonde with the giant bad guy smasher on her back reached across the bar and gave me a friendly slap on the shoulder.
Everyone celebrates a victory. Do it.
The silence thundered as I pulled out another shot glass and splashed whiskey into it. Most of the mythics were glaring at me, from the victorious team to the 2 girls Aaron had been chatting with. Once I had my shot in hand, Andrew lifted his glass.
When you're a hammer,
he shouted.
Everything's a nail,
the mythics shouted in turn, the ebullient atmosphere bursting through the room again as everyone laughed and downed their shots. Aaron met my eyes, grinned, and tossed his whiskey back. I tipped my head, dumping the liquid into my mouth. It burned all the way down, and I wheezed. The petite blonde clapped me on the shoulder again.
Good stuff, right?
Yeah, I gasped.
I'm Zora,
she added. This is Andrew. She waved at the team leader.
Cameron,
the tall jerk.
Darren,
the muscly jerk.
And Sierra,
the female jerk. Pleasure to meet you. I directed the words at Zora only, otherwise I would have been lying. Congratulations on the victory. What was the job?
Exterminating a vampire nest.
She said it the same way I might remark on squishing a spider in the bathroom.
It'll be a big payday this month.
Wow, I said faintly. My guess about their outfits had been spot on.
Oh,
Aaron leaned on the bar.
I hadn't mentioned vampires yet, had I?
No.
What about werewolves? Did I mention those?
Also, a no. Zora laughed.
Don't worry. Vampires and shifters are hardly the scariest things out there.
You don't say, I muttered, feeling queasy. How was that supposed to make me worry less? I hoped they were just messing with me, but I doubted it.
Looking pale there,
Sierra commented snidely, sweeping her ponytail over her shoulder.
Don't faint. You might hurt yourself.
I bet she'd do better than you did on your first vamp sighting.
Zora shot back before I could respond.
Didn't you piss yourself?
Sierra went red.
I fell in a puddle.
Sure you did,
Aaron agreed mockingly. Sierra slammed her shot glass down on the counter and stalked away. The 2 younger guys followed her.
Those kids,
Zora remarked. With a friendly wave at me and Aaron, she joined another group clustered around a table, where Andrew had launched into a detailed rendition of their adventure. The evening flew by, and I was busy for all of it. Around 11, the place started to empty. The vampire hunters left first, probably overheating in their leather gear, and others trickled out until it was just Aaron in conversation with Lyndon the sorcerer, Tom, the shy psychic, reading in the corner, the 2 girls who'd chit-chatted with Aaron earlier, and a handful of others whose names I didn't know. At 11:30, Ramsay stuck his head out to let me know Cooper had left, and he was heading out now, too. I wished him a good night, then announced last call to the remaining mythics. Rising from their table, the 2 girls came up, both my age, one with her hair dyed a shocking teal blue, and the other with dusky skin, a wild mop of dark curls and large eyes. Blue hair carried an armload of what appeared to be perfume bottles, filled with brightly colored liquids. Can I get... Calculation lurked behind her gaze as she set the perfume bottles on the bar top. Actually, just a Coke. I forced a smile, but it wasn't as convincing as earlier in the evening. And you? I asked the other girl. Water. As I got out two glasses, blue hair gathered up her perfume bottles. Her fingers clumsily bumped a bright green one and it toppled over, rolling across the counter. I lunged to catch it as her hand shot out, but instead of grabbing it, she smacked it off the bar. It hit the floor and shattered. A poof of green mist exploded outward, dousing everything within 6 feet, including me.
"Whoa!"
Aaron exclaimed, leaping up from his chair.
"What happened? What is that?"
I backed up a few steps, my short apron coated in shimmering green. The floors, the counter, my station, the shelves of liquor bottles all stained with the liquid.
"Oh, no,"
Blue Hair said with unconvincing dismay.
"My dye.
Well, that's a shame." She picked up the remaining bottles. "You know, I think I'll head out now."
"Head out?"
Aaron repeated angrily.
"It's your shit and you knocked it over. You can help her clean it up."
"No, Sinclair."
The cold voice drifted from the corner of the room. A woman descended the staircase and paused a few steps from the bottom. Tabitha, the second guild officer.
"It's Miss Dawson's responsibility."
Her dark eyes turned my way, and I suddenly had a real good idea who had leaked the truth about my human status to the entire guild. The only ones who'd known beside Aaron, Kai, and Ezra were Clara and the three officers. Aaron stepped toward me.
"I'll help you then."
"Set foot behind the bar, and I'll write you up for insubordination, Sinclair. You know the kitchen area's staff only."
Tabitha smiled coolly at Blue Hair and her friend.
"Have a good night, ladies."
Oozing smugness, the girls strolled out the door. Aaron looked between me and Tabitha, then started around the bar to join me.
"Sinclair!"
Tabitha warned.
"Go ahead and write me up."
"You'll lose your bonuses for the month."
"Fine."
I raced to the edge of the bar before Aaron could step onto forbidden ground.
"It's okay,"
I said quietly, blocking his path.
"I'll take care of it."
His eyes blazed with anger.
"I don't care about the damn bonus. I'll help you."
"It's just a bit of cleaning. I can handle it."
I wasn't letting him lose the money he'd gone all week without sleep to earn. I lowered my voice more.
"If you help me, she wins."
Jaw flexing, he reluctantly stepped back. Tabitha's expression didn't change, but I could sense her smugness. She won whether Aaron helped me or not. Ignoring her, I strode into the back to get cleaning supplies. Whatever the hell the dye was made of, it was impossible to clean. The oily texture smeared over everything, no matter how hard I scrubbed it. And after turning 4 dish rags completely green, I switched to paper towels. Midnight came and went as I wiped and scoured and rinsed and washed everything the oily mist had touched. Tabitha returned every 10 minutes to check on my progress and ensure Aaron remained in his chair, seething as he waited. The last few members made their way out, no one speaking. Finally, I threw the last of the green paper towel into the overflowing garbage bin and straightened my aching back. All the dye was gone except for what was liberally splattered over me. I hurried into the staff bathroom and groaned when I saw my reflection in the mirror. My apron hadn't saved my clothes. My red shorts and white top were ruined. Green smeared my skin and coated the ends of my hair on one side. Ditching my apron, I washed my hands, arms, face, and legs. The substance came off my skin with soap, but no amount of soap, water, or scrubbing would dim the green in my hair. I bit hard on my lip, blinking furiously. Be mean. Be rude. Insult me. Wreck my workspace. Stain my clothes. Fine. Whatever. But I loved my hair. And now the bottom 6 inches on one side were dyed a hideous green. Would I have to cut it off? With angry movements, I finished washing up, collected my purse and umbrella, and circled back to the front. When I came through the saloon doors, Aaron was waiting. He took in my stained clothes and wet green hair.
It didn't wash out?
He asked gruffly.
I'll call Catherine tomorrow and have her come in to figure it out.
Figure out what?
I asked tiredly as I pulled out my cell phone. That dye is an alchemic potion. Catherine's our master alchemist. She'll know how to get it out of your hair, I promise.
I nodded, trying not to get my hopes up. As I walked to the pub door, Aaron at my side, I dialed the cab company. The phone buzzed a busy signal. Saturday night, I muttered. It was late, pushing almost 2. The cab companies would be swamped with late-night clubbers. I called again and got another busy signal. My back ached and my legs throbbed from crouching for 2 hours. I just wanted to go home, shower, and curl up with a blanket and a cup of tea. Maybe Justin's tea fetish wasn't so strange after all. I called one more time and got the busy signal. Screw it. Guess I'll go on foot.
I'll walk you home,
Aaron said. That's fine, I assured him. I'm over in Cole Harbor off West Georgia Street and...
Tori.
His stern growl made me freeze.
I'm walking you home.
I measured his uncompromising expression, then surrendered. Okay. Thank you. He pushed the door open and I walked out. Conveniently, I didn't need to lock up. There was always at least one officer at the guild headquarters, so they never locked the doors. Tabitha obviously was tonight's on-duty officer. My blood boiled at the thought of her, and I wondered again if she was the one who'd leaked that I was human. She didn't want me at the guild, and since her fellow officers wouldn't ban me, the easiest way to get rid of me was to make me quit. How much of the antagonism I'd experienced over the past week had she quietly encouraged? Side by side, Aaron and I ambled past barred windows and boarded up doors, and despite the warm night, I shivered. The disreputable street was quiet but not deserted. A handful of men walked quickly through the darkness, while others, tucked into nooks or sitting beside shopping carts covered in ratty tarps, watched us with empty stares. I didn't want to admit it, but walking alone would have been stupid. I was glad Aaron was with me. Thanks, I said again as Victorian-style buildings and respectable shops replaced the graffiti-tagged walls. I appreciate it.
No problem.
He glanced at me out of the corner of his eye.
I'm sorry about earlier.
It wasn't your fault.
Yeah, but...
He raked a hand through his rust-orange hair.
It always takes time for the gang to warm up to a new member. But I've never seen them this... I wasn't expecting it.
It's because I'm not a member, I'm just a liability. Tabitha's word.
You're a good bartender. What else do you need to be?
I huffed, pleased by the compliment even though I knew it wasn't true. Okay, first off, I'm not that good at bartending. If anything, I'm an amateur, admit it.
You're doing a great job.
Smiling, I patted his arm, surprised again by the warmth of his skin. You'll make a good officer someday, Aaron. His hand brushed my arm, slid down and caught my fingers.
I don't want to see you go, but if you've had enough of those assholes, I get it.
I resisted the urge to peek at my hand enveloped in his warm grip, my heart beating faster than our brisk pace warranted. I can manage for another week before the MPD gives the official no.
Ah, about that.
He casually slid his hand from mine, and I hid my disappointment.
I asked Clara yesterday where your paperwork was at, and it turns out Darius needs to sign off on it before she can submit it. He won't be back for another week or more, so the official no won't come for another couple weeks after that.
Oh. I bit my lip. One more week of cranky jerks I could deal with, but 3? Was I that masochistic, or was it time to call it quits? His gaze darted over my face, reading my reaction. We crossed the red brick intersection where I'd found the guild job printout and headed down Water Street, passing cute shops, restaurants, and cafes, all closed now. A few people strolled by on their way home after a night out. How long have you been a member of the guild? I asked.
6 years.
He smiled as though recalling a fond memory.
Me and Kai joined the day I turned 18. The minimum age to join a guild.
There are other guilds, right? What made you choose the Crow and Hammer?
Honestly, I picked CNH to tick off my parents. They wanted me to join their guild, but there, I would have always been the GM's spoiled son, constantly having to prove my worth while everyone questioned whether my parents had handed me my success on a silver platter.
So you picked a guild where you could earn your place?
I could have done that at almost any guild. I picked CNH because it's the opposite of my parents' guild. They can't stand CNH's reputation.
He laced his hands behind his head as he walked.
The Crow and Hammer's been collecting misfits for decades. Mythics who don't fit in. People who have skills to offer but can't get on at another guild. Rogues who need a second chance. The only respectable thing about us is that when we take a job, we get it done. Always.
That explains a few things.
He laughed. Right? Most guilds are boring. They specialize too much. All mages or all sorcerers or they only do specific work. Ever heard of Smoke and Mirrors?
Yeah. Isn't that the company that does practical effects for all the big movies? Wait. Are you suggesting what I think you are?
They're a guild. Sorcerers, alchemists, a few mages, and a load of telekinetics. They do all their filming on closed sets, and people think it's to protect their trade secrets. But it's more than that.
Holy shit.
Right? They were my second choice for a guild, but I wanted to catch bad guys. Smoke and Mirrors doesn't do any bounty work.
We crossed another brick intersection, passing the famous Gastown steam clock, its face indicating 2:10 a.m. The breeze was warm, with that nighttime freshness I loved. I breathed deeply as we continued down the street. "You said Kai joined on the same day as you," I murmured. "What brought him to the Crow and Hammer?"
"He followed me. He didn't care what guild he joined, and his time was almost up."
He noticed my askance look.
"Guilding is a requirement once a mythic turns 18. Unless you want to be ungilded, but that's like being on parole. A million restrictions, mandatory check-ins, random inspections."
"That sucks." I scrunched my face. "Why is it so strict? I mean, don't some mythics want to live normal lives and not battle vampires on weekends?"
"Most mythics want to live like humans. There are lots of guilds to choose from. Over a dozen in the downtown core alone. Some are businesses in their own right, and being a member is like working a regular job. Others you pay a monthly or yearly membership fee and carry on with your mundane life like any other person."
He gestured wildly, encompassing the city.
"The whole point is regulation and enforcement. Mythics pay their guilds, the guilds pay Magipol, and Magipol uses that money to keep the world sane. Guilds collect some of that money back as bonuses and bounties for helping Magipol enforce their laws. The restrictions on ungilded mythics are so harsh because it means someone has to monitor those people. Guilds are responsible for their members' behavior."
"I see. It's like mutually assured obedience."
"Exactly. If I break a minor rule, Magipol will fine me and my guild. If I really screw up, Magipol can arrest me and levy large fines and other punishments against my guild. Screw up enough, and they'll dissolve a guild that fails to manage and control its members."
"And if that happened, they would offer bounties to other guilds to ensure you disband?"
"You got it. The system's built on self-regulation. The guilds enforce their members' adherence to the rules, and Magipol enforces the guild's adherence. It's the reason we can keep all this hidden from the public. Otherwise, Magipol would need to be as large as any government."
"A system built entirely on the guild structure, hidden in plain sight. Part of human society while also separate." I mulled it over as we strolled into the nest of skyscrapers that marked the center of the downtown area.
"What about you, Tori?"
Aaron asked after a few minutes.
"Your driver's license is from Ontario. When did you come out to the West Coast?"
8, almost 9 months ago. I needed a fresh start, and my brother lives here."
"Find your own place yet?"
"No," I grumped, still sleeping on his couch. He chuckled knowingly.
"It takes around a year for most newcomers to find a place of their own. The rental market is insane."
"That's an understatement."
"Why did you need a fresh start?"
His tone was curious but not insistent, and I considered whether to answer. I was living with relatives, but my father started butting into my life. I didn't want to deal with that, so I packed my bags and moved away. I shrugged. Plus, a new job market was helpful. I was running out of options back home.
You mentioned you were having trouble finding a job here, too.
I swept my green-tinted hair over my shoulders. Yeah, well, most places do fire you for throwing drinks on customers or punching creeps in the face.
That's shitty.
His grin returned.
No one at the Crow and Hammer would reprimand you for defending yourself.
I wasn't defending myself when I threw a drink on you. I expected him to laugh, but his expression sobered.
I was being an ass, and I deserved it. I'm no better than the others. Razzing new people is a habit that's hard to shake.
You were annoying, but not cruel. I plucked at my stained shirt. This is crossing a line, though. Honestly, I'm not sure how much longer I can stay.
If I could make them understand how awesome you are, I would.
He murmured.
They don't know what they're missing out on.
To my dismay, my cheeks flushed hot. I was not a blusher. I could count past occasions without using all my fingers. I'm not that great. I muttered, ducking my head. You barely know me.
I can tell,
he said confidently.
And even if I wasn't sure about you, Ezra likes you.
He seems like the sort of nice guy who likes everyone.
He's nice to everyone. Too nice, if you ask me. But he doesn't go out of his way for strangers.
He tilted his face skyward as though remembering something.
By the way, don't ask Ezra why he joined the guild.
Okay.
And best not to ask about his family, either.
I nodded. I could understand someone not wanting past ghosts stirred awake by nosy questions, though I was dying of curiosity now, of course. Anything else I shouldn't ask him?
Maybe don't ask him out either.
I blinked. Did it seem like I was planning to?
No, but Ezra doesn't date, so he'd turn you down and things would get all awkward.
He slanted a glance at me.
Plus, I'm planning to ask you out, so I don't want that messed up.
My heart gave a small flutter, and I sternly told it to quit that bullshit. Still, I had to fight back a grin. You are you?
Damn right.
And when were you intending to carry out that plan?
If you were going to say yes, then...
He squinted around.
How much farther to your place?
4 blocks.
In 4 blocks, then.
I laughed. What if I'm going to say no?
Then I'll wait until I can butter you up first.
He canted his head.
Do I get a hint about your answer?
I sauntered along, hands folded behind my back and purse bumping my side, my oversized umbrella hanging from the strap. Do you need a hint?
I mean this in the best way possible, but you're a difficult woman to predict, Tori.
I gave him my best mysterious smile. 3 blocks now. He grumbled. We walked in companionable silence for another 2 blocks, and my nerves jumped in anticipation. Was he planning to merely ask me on a date, or did he have something more in mind? High-rise apartment buildings closed in on all sides, a few windows still alight. As we reached the next intersection, he looped an arm around my waist and pulled me around the corner. Aaron, this is the wrong way.
I know,
he said in a low voice, his grim tone surprising me.
It's just that I'm pretty sure the two guys back there are following us. We might be in trouble.
Chapter 9. My heart jumped, and not in a good way. Following us.
I noticed them after we left Water Street.
Aaron muttered.
It could be a coincidence, but I doubt it. Keep your eyes forward. I'll check if they keep tailing us.
Adrenaline surged through my veins. I hooked my arm through his and we power walked to the next intersection and turned right again. Resisting the urge to look back, I kept my focus on the sidewalk ahead, well lit by street lamps, traffic lights, and the occasional flare of headlights as a car passed. We made another right turn and came out on our original street. We'd made a pointless 1-block circle that no one in their right mind would walk unless they were lost.
Shit. Aaron hissed. They're still on our tail. And they know we've spotted them.
He extended his stride until I had to jog every third step.